Chapter 10, The Shell in the Glasses. Piggy eyed the advancing figure carefully. Nowadays, he sometimes found that he saw more clearly if he removed his glasses and shifted the one lens to the other eye. But even through the good eye, after what had happened, Ralph remained unmistakably Ralph. He came now out of the coconut trees, limping, dirty, with dead leaves hanging from his shock of yellow hair. One eye was a slit in his puffy cheek, and a great scab had formed on his right knee. He paused for a moment and peered at the figure on the platform. "Piggy, are you the only one left? There's some little uns. They don't count. No big uns? Oh, Sam Narick. They're collecting wood. Nobody else? Not that I know of." Ralph climbed on the platform carefully. The coarse grass was still worn away where the assembly used to sit. The fragile white conch still gleamed by the polished seat. Ralph sat down on the grass facing the chief's seat and the conch. Piggy knelt at his left, and for a long minute there was silence. At last Ralph cleared his throat and whispered something. Piggy whispered back, "What you say?" Ralph spoke up. "Simon." Piggy said nothing but nodded solemnly. They continued to sit, gazing with impaired sight at the chief's seat and the glimmering lagoon. The green light and the glossy patches of sunshine played over their befouled bodies. At length, Ralph got up and went to the conch. He took the shell caressingly, with both hands, and knelt, leaning against the trunk. "Piggy, huh? What are we going to do?" Piggy nodded at the conch. "You could call an assembly?" Ralph laughed sharply as he said the word, and Piggy frowned. "You're still chief." Ralph laughed again. "You are, over us." "I got the conch." "Ralph, stop laughing like that. Look, there ain't no need, Ralph. What's the others going to think?" At last Ralph stopped. He was shivering. "Piggy?" That was Simon. "You said that before." "Piggy?" That was murder. "You stop it," said Piggy shrilly. "What good are you doing talking like that?" He jumped to his feet and stood over Ralph. It was dark. There was that bloody dance. There was lightning and thunder and rain. We was scared. "I wasn't scared," said Ralph slowly. I don't know what I was." "We was scared," said Piggy excitedly. "Anything might have happened. It wasn't what you said." He was gesticulating, searching for a formula. "Oh, Piggy." Ralph's voice, low and stricken, stopped Piggy's gestures. He bent down and waited. Ralph, cradling the conch, rocked himself to and fro. "Don't you understand, Piggy? The things we... He may still be... No. Perhaps he was only pretending." Piggy's voice trailed off at the sight of Ralph's face. "You were outside. Outside the circle. You never really came in. Didn't you see what we... What they did?" There was loathing, and at the same time a kind of feverish excitement in his voice. "Didn't you see, Piggy?" "Not all that well. I only got one eye now. You ought to know that, Ralph." Ralph continued to rock to and fro. "It was an accident," said Piggy suddenly. "That's what it was, an accident." His voice shrilled again. "Coming in the dark. He has no business crawling around like that out in the dark. He was batty. He asked for it." He gesticulated widely again. "It was an accident." "You didn't see what they did." "Look, Ralph, we gotta forget this. We can't do no good about it, see? I'm frightened. Of us. I want to go home. Oh, God, I want to go home." "It was an accident," said Piggy stubbornly, "and that's that." He touched Ralph's bare shoulder, and Ralph shuddered at the human contact. "And look, Ralph," Piggy glanced around quickly, then leaned close. "Don't let on we was in that dance. Not to Sam Narick." "But we were. All of us." Piggy shook his head. "Not us till last. They never noticed in the dark. Anyway, you said I was only on the outside." "So was I," muttered Ralph. "I was on the outside too." Piggy nodded eagerly. "That's right. We was on the outside. We never done nothing. We never seen nothing." Piggy paused, then went on. "We'll live on our own, the four of us." "Four of us? We aren't enough to keep the fire burning." "We'll try. See? I lit it." Sam Narick came dragging a great log out of the forest. They dumped it by the fire and turned to the pool. Ralph jumped to his feet. Hi, you two. The twins checked a moment, then walked on. They're going to bathe, Ralph. Better get it over. The twins were very surprised to see Ralph. They flushed and looked past him into the air. Hello. Fancy meeting you, Ralph. We've just been in the forest to get wood for the fire. We got lost last night. Ralph examined his toes. You got lost after the... Piggy cleaned his lens. After the feast, said Sam in a stifled voice. Eric nodded. Yes, after the feast. We left early, said Piggy quickly, because we were tired. So did we, very early. We were very tired. Sam touched on a scratch on his forehead and then hurriedly took his hand away. Eric fingered his split lip. Yes, we were very tired, repeated Sam. So we left early. Was it a good... The air was heavy with unspoken knowledge. Sam twisted, and the obscene word shot out of him. Dance? Memory of the dance that none of them had attended shook all four boys convulsively. We left early. When Roger came to the neck of land that joined the Castle Rock to the mainland, he was not surprised to be challenged. He had reckoned during the terrible night on finding at least some of the tribe holding out against the horrors of the island in the safest place. The voice rang out sharply from on high, where the diminishing crags were balanced one on another. Halt! Who goes there?
Roger.
Advance, friend.
Roger advanced.
You could see who I was.
The chief said we got to challenge everyone.
Roger peered up.
You couldn't stop me coming if I wanted.
Couldn't I? Climb up and see.
Roger clambered up the ladder-like cliff.
Look at this.
A log had been jammed under the topmost rock, and another lever under that. Robert leaned lightly on the lever, and the rock groaned. A full effort would send the rock thundering down to the neck of land. Roger admired.
He's a proper chief, isn't he?
Robert nodded. He's going to take us hunting.
He jerked his head in the direction of the distant shelters, where a thread of white smoke climbed up the sky. Roger, sitting on the very edge of the cliff, looked somberly back at the island as he worked with his fingers at a loose tooth. His gaze settled on the top of a distant mountain, and Robert changed the unspoken subject.
He's going to beat Wilford.
What for?
Robert shook his head doubtfully.
I don't know. He didn't say. He got angry and made us tie Wilford up.
He's been... He giggled excitedly. He's been tied up for hours, waiting.
But didn't the chief say what?
I never heard him.
Sitting on the tremendous rock in the torrid sun, Roger received this news as an illumination. He ceased to work at his tooth and sat still, assimilating the possibilities of irresponsible authority. Then, without another word, he climbed down the back of the rocks toward the cave and the rest of the tribe. The chief was sitting there, naked to the waist, his face blocked out in white and red. The tribe lay in a semicircle before him. The newly beaten and untied Wilfred was sniffing noisily in the background. Roger squatted with the rest.
Tomorrow, went on the chief, we shall hunt again.
He pointed at the savage, and that with his spear.
Some of you will stay here to improve the cave and defend the gate. I shall take a few hunters with me and bring back meat. The defenders of the gate will see the others don't sneak in.
A savage raised his hand, and the chief turned a bleak, painted face toward him.
Why should they try to sneak in, chief?
The chief was vague but earnest.
They will. They'll try to spoil things we do. So the watchers at the gate must be careful. And then...
The chief paused. They saw a triangle of startling pink dart out, pass along his lips and vanish again.
And then the beast must try to come in. You remember how he crawled?
The semicircle shuddered and muttered in agreement.
He came disguised. He may come again, even though we gave him the head of our kill to eat. So watch and be careful.
Stanley lifted his forearm off the rock and held up an interrogative finger.
Well?
But didn't we? Didn't we?
He squirmed and looked down. No.
The silence that followed, each savage flinched away from his individual memory.
No! How could we kill it?
Half relieved, half daunted by the implication of further terrors, the savages murmured again.
So leave the mountain alone, said the chief solemnly, and give it to the head if you go hunting.
Stanley flicked his finger again.
I expect the beast disguised himself.
Perhaps, said the chief. A theological speculation presented itself. We'd better keep on the right side of him anyhow. You can't tell what he might do.
The tribe considered this, and then were shaken, as if by a flow of wind. The chief saw the effect of his words and stood abruptly. But tomorrow we'll hunt, and when we've got meat, we'll have a feast. Bill put up his hand. Chief?
Yes?
What'll we use for the lighting the fire? The chief's blush was hidden by the white and red clay. Into his uncertain silence, the tribe spilled their murmur once more. Then the chief held up his hand.
We shall take fire from the others. Listen, tomorrow we'll hunt and get meat. Tonight, I'll go along with two hunters. Who will come?
Maurice and Roger put up their hands.
Maurice.
Yes, chief?
Where was their fire?
Back at the old place by the fire rock.
The chief nodded.
The rest of you can go to sleep as soon as the sun sets. But us three, Maurice, Roger, and me, we've got work to do. We'll leave just before sunset.
Maurice put up a hand. But what happens if we meet...
The chief waved his objection aside. We'll keep along by the sands. Then if he comes, we'll do our dance again.
Only the three of us?
Again the murmur swelled and died away.
Piggy handed Ralph his glasses and waited to receive back his sight. The wood was damp, and this was the third time they had lighted it. Ralph stood back, speaking to himself. We don't want another night without fire. He looked round guiltily at the three boys standing by. This was the first time he had admitted the double function of the fire. Certainly one was to send up a beckoning column of smoke, but the other was to be a hearth now and a comfort until they slept. Eric breathed on the wood till it glowed and sent out a little flame. A billow of white and yellow smoke reeked up. Piggy took back his glasses and looked at the smoke with pleasure. If only we could make a radio, or a plane, or a boat. Ralph dredged in his fading knowledge of the world. We might get taken prisoner by the Reds.
Eric pushed it back his hair. They'd be better than...
He would not name people, and Sam finished the sentence for him by nodding along the beach. Ralph remembered the ungainly figure on a parachute. He said something about a dead man. He flushed painfully at this admission, that he'd been more present at the dance. He made urging motions at the smoke and with his body.
Don't stop. Go on up.
Smoke's getting thinner.
We need more wood already, even when it's wet.
My asthma. The response was mechanical.
Sucks to your asthmar.
If I pull logs, I get my asthma bad. I wish I didn't, Ralph, but there it is.
The three boys went to the forest and fetched armfuls of rotten wood. Once more, the smoke rose, yellow and thick.
Let's get something to eat.
Together they went to the fruit trees, carrying their spears, saying little, cramming in haste. When they came out of the forest again, the sun was setting, and only embers glowed in the fire, and there was no smoke.
I can't carry any more wood, said Eric. I'm tired.
Ralph cleared his throat.
We kept the fire going up there. Up there it was small, but this has got to be a big one.
Ralph carried a fragment of the fire and watched the smoke that drifted into the dust.
We've got to keep going.
Eric flung himself down.
I'm too tired. And what's the good?
Eric, cried Ralph in a shocked voice.
Don't talk like that.
Sam knelt by Eric.
Well, what is the good?
Ralph tried indignantly to remember. There was something good about a fire, something overwhelmingly good.
Ralph's told you often enough, said Piggy moodily. How else are we going to be rescued?
Of course, if we don't make smoke. He squatted before them in the crowding dusk.
Don't you understand? What's the good of wishing for radios and boats?
He held out his hand and twisted the fingers into a fist. There's only one thing we can do to get out of this mess. Anyone can play at hunting. Anyone can get us meat. He looked from face to face. Then, at the moment of greatest passion and conviction, that curtain flapped in his head and he forgot what he had been driving at. He knelt there, his fist clenched, gazing solemnly from one of the to the other. Then the curtain whisked back.
Oh, yes. So we've got to make smoke, and more smoke.
But we can't keep it going. Look at that.
The fire was dying on them.
Two to mind the fire, said Ralph, half to himself. That's 12 hours a day. We can't get any more wood, Ralph. Not in the dark, not at night.
We can light it every morning, said Piggy. Nobody ain't going to see smoke in the dark.
Sam nodded vigorously. It was different when the fire was up there.
Ralph stood up, feeling curiously defenseless with the darkness pressing in.
Let the fire go, then, for tonight. He led the way to the first shelter, which still stood, though battered. The bed leaves lay within, dry and noisy to the touch.
In the next shelter, a little one was talking in his sleep. The four biggins crept into the shelter and burrowed under the leaves. The twins lay together and Ralph and Piggy at the other end. For a while, there was the continual creak and rustle of leaves as they tried for comfort.
Piggy?
Yeah?
All right.
Suppose so.
At length, save for an occasional rustle, the shelter was silent. An oblong of darkness relieved with brilliant spangles hung before them, and there was the hollow sound of surf on the reef.
Ralph settled himself for his nightly game of supposing.
Supposing they could be transported home by jet, then before morning they would land at that big airfield in Wiltshire. They would go by car. No, for things to be perfect, they would go by train. All the way down to Devon, and take that cottage again. Then at the foot of the garden, the wild ponies would come and look over the wall.
Ralph turned restlessly in the leaves. Dartmoor was wild, and so were the ponies. But the attraction of wildness had gone. His mind skated to a consideration of a tamed town, where savagery would not set foot. What could be safer than the bus center with its lamps and wheels? All at once, Ralph was dancing around with a lamp standard. There was a bus crawling out of the bus station, a strange bus.
Ralph! Ralph!
What is it?
Don't make a noise like that.
Sorry.
From the darkest of the further end of the shelter came a dreadful moaning, and they shattered the leaves in their fear.
Sam and Eric, locked in an embrace, were fighting each other.
Sam! Sam!
Hey, Eric!
Presently, all was quiet again. Piggy spoke softly to Ralph.
We gotta get out of this.
What do you mean?
Get rescued.
For the first time that day, and despite the crowding blackness, Ralph sniggered.
I mean it, whispered Piggy. If we don't get home soon, we'll be barmy.
Round the bend. Bomb happy. Crackers.
Ralph pushed the damp tendrils of hair out of his eyes.
You read a letter to your auntie.
Piggy considered this solemnly.
I don't know where she is now, and I haven't got an envelope and a stamp, and there isn't a mailbox or a postman.
The success of his tiny joke overcame Ralph. His sniggers became uncontrollable. His body jumped and twitched.
Piggy rebuked him with indignity.
I haven't said anything funny at all.
Ralph continued to snigger through his hurt chest, his twitchings exhausting him till he lay breathless and woebegone, waiting for the next spasm. During one of these pauses, he was ambushed by sleep.
Ralph, you've been making a noise again. Do be quiet, Ralph, because...
Ralph heaved over among the leaves. He had reason to be thankful that his dream was broken, for the bus had been nearer and more distinct.
Why?
Because...
Be quiet and listen.
Ralph lay down carefully, to the accompaniment of a long sigh from the leaves. Eric moaned something and then lay still. The darkness, save for the useless oblong of stars, was blanket thick.
I can't hear anything.
There's something moving outside.
Ralph's head prickled. The sound of his blood drowned all else and then subsided.
I can't hear anything.
Listen. Listen for a long time.
Quite clearly and emphatically, and only a yard or so away from the back of the shelter, a stick cracked.
The blood roared again in Ralph's ears. Confused images chased each other through his mind.
A composite of these things was prowling around the shelters. He could feel Piggy's head against his shoulder, and the convulsive grip of a hand.
Ralph! Ralph!
Shut up and listen.
Desperately, Ralph prayed that the beast would prefer Littlin's.
A voice whispered horribly outside.
Piggy! Piggy!
It's come, gasped Piggy. It's real. He clung to Ralph and reached to get his breath.
Piggy, come outside. I want you, Piggy.
Ralph's mouth was against Piggy's ear.
Don't say anything.
Piggy, where are you, Piggy?
Something brushed against the back of the shelter.
Piggy kept still for a moment.
Then he had his asthma. He arched his back and crashed among the leaves with his legs. Ralph rolled away from him. Then there was a vicious snarling in the mouth of the shelter, and the plunge and thump of living things. Someone tripped over Ralph, and Piggy's corner became a complication of snarls and crashes and the flying limbs. Ralph hit out. Then he and what seemed like a dozen others were rolling over and over, hitting, biting, scratching. He was torn and jolted, found fingers in his mouth and bit them. A fist withdrew and came back like a piston, so that the whole shelter exploded into light. Ralph twisted sideways on top of a writhing body and felt hot breath on his cheek. He began to pound the mouth below him, using his clenched fist as a hammer. He hit with more and more passionate hysteria as the face became slippery. A knee jerked up between his legs and he fell sideways, busying himself with his pain, and the fight rolled over him. Then the shelter collapsed with smothering finality, and the anonymous shapes fought their way out and through. Dark figures drew themselves out of the wreckage and flitted away, till the screams of the little ones and Piggy's gasps were once more audible. Ralph called out in a quavering voice, "Oh, you little ones, go to sleep. We've had a fight with the others. Now go to sleep." Sam Narek came close and peered at Ralph. "Are you two all right?"
"I think so. I got busted."
"So did I. How's Piggy?" They hauled Piggy clear of the wreckage and leaned him against a tree. The night was cool and purged of immediate terror. Piggy's breathing was a little easier.
"Did you get hurt, Piggy?"
"Not much." "That was Jack and his hunters," said Ralph bitterly.
"Why can't they leave us alone?"
"We gave them something to think about," said Sam. Honesty compelled him to go on. "At least you did. I got mixed up with myself in a corner." "I gave one of them what for," said Ralph. "Smashed him up all right. He won't want to come and fight us again in a hurry."
"So did I," said Eric. "When I woke up, one was kicking me in the face. I got an awful bloody face, I think, Ralph, but I did him in the end."
"What did you do?"
"I got my knee up," said Eric with simple pride, "and I hit him right in the pills. You should have heard him holler. He won't come back in a hurry either, so we don't do too badly."
Ralph moved suddenly in the dark, but then he heard Eric working his mouth.
"What's the matter?"
"Just a loose tooth."
Piggy drew up his legs. "You all right, Piggy?"
"I thought they wanted the conch."
Ralph trotted down the pale beach and jumped onto the platform. The conch still glimmered by the chief's seat. He gazed for a moment or two, then went back to Piggy.
"They didn't take the conch."
"I know they didn't take the conch. They came for something else."
"Ralph, what am I going to do?"
Far off along the bow stave of beach, three figures trotted toward the castle rock. They kept away from the forest and down by the water. Occasionally they sang softly. Occasionally they turned cartwheels down by the moving streak of phosphorescence. The chief led then, trotting steadily, exulting in his achievement. He was a chief now in truth, and he made stabbing motions with his spear. From his left hand dangled Piggy's broken glasses. Chapter 11. Castle Rock. In the short chill of dawn, the four boys gathered around the black smudge where the fire had been, while Ralph knelt and blew. Gray, feathery ashes scurried hither and thither as his breath, but no spark shone among them. The twins watched anxiously, and Piggy sat expressionless behind the luminous wall of his myopia. Ralph continued to blow till his ears were singing with the effort, but then the first breeze of dawn took the job off his hands and blinded him with ashes. He squatted back, swore, and rubbed water out of his eyes.
"No use."
Eric looked down at him through a mask of dried blood. Piggy peered in the general direction of Ralph.
"Course it's no use, Ralph. Now we got no fire."
Ralph brought his face within a couple feet of Piggy's.
"Can you see me?"
"A bit." Ralph allowed the swollen flap of his cheek to close his eye again. "They've got our fire." Rage shrilled his voice.
"They stole it!"
"That's them," said Piggy. "They blinded me, see?"
"That's Jack Merridew. You call an assembly, Ralph. We gotta decide what to do."
"An assembly for only us? It's all we got. Sam, let me hold on to you." They went toward the platform.
"Blow the conch," said Piggy. "Blow as loud as you can."
The forest re-echoed and birds lifted, crying out at the treetops, as on that first morning ages ago. Both ways the beach was deserted. Some little ones came from the shelters. Ralph sat down on the polished trunk, and the three others stood right before him. He nodded, and Sam Narek sat down on the right. Ralph pushed the conch into Piggy's hands.
He held the shining thing carefully and blinked at Ralph. Go on, then.
I just take the conch to say this. I can't see no more, and I gotta get my glasses back. Awful things has been done on this island. I voted for you, my chief. He's the only one who ever got anything done. So now you speak, Ralph, and tell us what. Or else.
Piggy broke off, sniveling. Ralph took back the conch as he sat down.
Just an ordinary fire. You'd think we could do that, wouldn't you? Just a smoke signal so we can be rescued. Are we savages or what? Only now there's no signal going up. Ships may be passing. Do you remember how we went hunting and the fire went out and a ship passed by? And they all think he's best as chief? Then there was... That's his fault, too. If it hadn't been for him, it would never have happened. Now Piggy can't see, and they came stealing. Ralph's voice rang up. At night, in darkness, and stole our fire. They stole it. We'd have given them fire if they asked. But they stole it, and the signal's out, and we can't ever be rescued. Don't you see why I mean? We'd even give them fire for themselves, only they stole it.
He paused lamely as the curtain flickered in his brain.
Piggy held out his hands for the conch. What are you going to do, Ralph? This is just talking without deciding. I want my glasses.
I'm trying to think.
Supposing we go looking like we used to, washed and hairbrushed. After all, we aren't savages, really, and being rescued isn't a game.
He opened the flap of his cheek and looked at the twins.
We could smarten up a bit and then go.
We ought to take spears, said Sam.
Even Piggy, because we may need them.
You haven't got the conch.
Piggy held up the conch.
You can take spears if you want, but I shan't.
What's the good?
I'll have to be led like a dog anyhow.
Yes, laugh. Go on, laugh.
There's them on this island as would laugh at anything.
And what happened? What's grown-ups going to think?
Young Simon was murdered. And there was that other kid who had a mark on his face. Who's seen him since we first come here?
Piggy, stop a moment.
I got the conch. I'm going to that Jack Meridew and tell him I am.
You'll get hurt.
What can he do more than he has?
I'll tell him what's what.
You let me carry the conch, Ralph. I'll show him the one thing he hasn't got.
Piggy paused for a moment and peered round at the dim figures. The shape of the old assembly, trodden in the grass, listened to him.
I'm going to him with this conch in my hands. I'm going to hold it out.
Look, I'm going to say, you're stronger than I am, and you haven't got asthma. You can see, I'm going to say, and with both eyes. But I don't ask for my glasses back, not as a favor. I don't ask you to be a sport. I'll say, not because you're strong, but because because right's right. Give me my glasses. I'm going to say, you got to.
Piggy ended, flushed and trembling. He pushed the conch quickly into Ralph's hands as though in a hurry to be rid of it, and wiped the tears from his eyes. The green light was gentle about them, and the conch lay at Ralph's feet, fragile and white. A single drop of water that had escaped Piggy's fingers now flashed on the delicate curve like a star. At last, Ralph sat up straight and drew back his hair.
All right. I mean, you can try if you like. We'll go with you.
He'll be painted, said Sam timidly.
You know how he'll be.
He won't think much of us.
If he gets waxy, we've had it.
Ralph scowled at Sam. Dimly, he remembered something Simon had once said to him, by the rocks.
Don't be silly, he said. Then he added quickly, let's go.
He held out the conch to Piggy, who flushed, this time with pride.
You must carry it.
When we're ready, I'll carry it.
Piggy sought in his mind for words to convey his passionate willingness to carry the conch against all odds.
I don't mind. I'll be glad, Ralph. Only I'll have to be led.
Ralph put the conch back on the shining log.
We better eat and then get ready.
They made their way to the devastated fruit trees. Piggy was helped to his food and found some by touch.
While they ate, Ralph thought of the afternoon.
We'll be like we were. We'll wash.
Sam gulped down a mouthful and protested.
But we bathe every day.
Ralph looked at the filthy objects before him and sighed.
We ought to comb our hair, only it's too long.
I've got both socks left in the shelter, said Eric, so we could pull them over our heads like caps, sort of.
We could find some stuff, said Piggy, and tie your hair back.
Like a girl?
No, of course not.
Then we must go as we are, said Ralph, and they won't be any better.
Eric made a detaining gesture.
But they'll be painted. You know how it is.
The others nodded.
They understood only too well the liberation into savagery that the concealing paint brought.
"Well, we won't be painted," said Ralph, "because we aren't savages."
Sam and Eric looked at each other.
"All the same," Ralph shouted, "no paint."
He tried to remember.
"Smoke," he said. "We want smoke."
He turned to the twins fiercely.
"I said smoke. We've got to have smoke."
There was silence, except for the multitudinous murmur of the bees. As last, Piggy spoke, kindly.
Because the smoke's a signal, and we can't be rescued if we don't have the signal."
"I knew that," shouted Ralph. He pulled his arm away from Piggy.
"Are you suggesting?"
"I'm just saying
what you always say," said Piggy hastily.
"I thought for a moment."
"I hadn't," said Ralph loudly. "I knew it all the time. I hadn't forgotten."
Piggy nodded propitiatingly.
"You're chief, Ralph. You remember everything."
"I hadn't forgotten."
"Of course not."
The twins were examining Ralph curiously, as though they were seeing him for the first time. They set off along the beach in formation. Ralph went first, limping a little, his spear carried over one shoulder. He saw things partially, though the tremble of the heat haze over the flashing sands, and his own long hair and injuries. Behind him came the twins, worrying now for a while, but full of unquenchable vitality. They said little, but trailed the butts of their wooden spears, for Piggy had found that, by looking down and shielding his tired sight from the sun, he could just see these moving along the sand. He walked between the trailing butts, therefore, the conch held carefully between his two hands. The boys made a compact little group that moved over the beach, four plate-like shadows dancing and mingling beneath them. There was no sign left of the storm, and the beach was swept clean like a blade that had been scoured. The sky and the mountain were at an immense distance, shimmering in the heat, and the reef was lifted by a mirage, floating in a kind of silver pool halfway up the sky. They passed the place where the tribe had danced. The charred sticks still lay on the rocks where the rain had quenched them, but the sand by the water was smoothed again. They passed this in silence. No one doubted that the tribe would be found at the Castle Rock, and when they came in sight of it, they stopped with one accord. The densest tangle on the island, a mass of twisted stems, black and green and impenetrable, lay on their left and tall grass swayed before them. Now Ralph went forward. Here was the crushed grass where they had all lain when he had gone to prospect. There was the neck of land, the ledge skirting the rock. Up there were the red pinnacles. Sam touched his arm.
Smoke.
There was a tiny smudge of smoke wavering into the air on the other side of the rock.
Some fire, I don't think.
Ralph turned. What are we hiding for? He stepped through the screen of grass onto the little open space that led to the narrow neck. You two follow behind. I'll go first, then Piggy a pace behind me. Keep your spears ready. Piggy peered anxiously into the luminous veil that hung before them and the world.
Is it safe? Ain't there a cliff? I can hear the sea.
You keep right close to me. Ralph moved forward onto the neck. He kicked a stone and it bounded into the water. Then the sea sucked down, revealing a red, weedy square, 40 feet beneath Ralph's left arm.
Am I safe? Quavered Piggy. I feel awful.
High above them from the pinnacles came a sudden shout, and then an imitation war cry that was answered by a dozen voices from behind the rock.
Give me the conch and stay still.
Halt! Who goes there?
Ralph bent back his hand and glimpsed Roger's dark face at the top.
You can see who I am, he shouted. Stop being silly.
He put the conch to his lips and began to blow. Savages appeared, painted out of recognition, edging around the ledge toward the neck. They carried spears and disposed themselves to defend the entrance. Ralph went on blowing and ignored Piggy's terrors.
Roger was shouting, "You mind out, see?"
At length, Ralph took his lips away and paused to get his breath back. His first words were a gasp, but audible, calling an assembly. The savages guarding the neck muttered among themselves, but made no motion. Ralph walked forwards a couple of steps. A voice whispered urgently behind him,
"Don't leave me, Ralph."
You kneel down, said Ralph sideways, and wait till I come back. He stood halfway along the neck and gazed at the savages intently. Freed by the paint, they had tied their hair back and were more comfortable than he was. Ralph made a resolution to tie his own back afterwards. Indeed, he felt like telling them to wait, and doing it there and then, but that was impossible. The savages sniggered a bit, and one gestured at Ralph with his spear. High above, Ralph took his hand off the lever and leaned out to see what was going on. The boys on the neck stood in a pool of their own shadow, diminished to shaggy heads. Piggy crouched, his back shapeless as a sack. "I'm calling an assembly." Silence. Roger took up a small stone and flung it between the twins, aiming to miss. They started, and Sam only just kept his footing. Some source of power began to pulse in Roger's body. Ralph spoke again loudly. "I'm calling an assembly." He ran his eye over them. "Where's Jack?" The group of boys stirred and consulted. A painted face spoke with the voice of Robert. "He's hunting, and he said we weren't to let you in." "I've come to see about the fire," said Ralph, "and about Piggy's specs." The group in front of him shifted, and laughter shivered outwards from among them. Light, excited laughter that went echoing among the tall rocks. A voice spoke from behind Ralph. "What do you want?" The twins made a bolt past Ralph and got between him and the entry. He turned quickly. Jack, identifiable by personality and red hair, was advancing from the forest. A hunter crouched on either side. All three were masked in green and black. Behind them on the grass, the headless and paunched body of a sow lay where they had dropped it. Piggy wailed, "Ralph, don't leave me!" With ludicrous care, he embraced the rock, pressing himself to it above the sucking sea. The sniggering of the savages became a loud, derisive cheer. Jack shouted above the noise, "You go away, Ralph. You keep to your end. This is my end and my tribe. You leave me alone." The jeering died away. "You pinched Piggy's specs," said Ralph breathlessly. "You've got to give them back."
"Got to? Who says?"
Ralph's temper blazed out.
"I say. You voted for me for chief. Didn't you hear the conch? You played a dirty trick. We'd have given you fire if you asked for it."
The blood was flowing in his cheeks, and the bunged up eye throbbed.
"You could have had fire whenever you wanted, but you didn't. You came sneaking up like a thief and stole Piggy's glasses. Say that again." "Thief! Thief!" Piggy screamed. "Ralph, mind me."
Jack made a rush and stabbed at Ralph's chest with a spear. Ralph sensed the position of the weapon from the glimpse he caught of Jack's arm and put the thrust aside with his own butt. Then he brought the end round and caught Jack a stinger across the ear. They were chest to chest, breathing fiercely, pushing and glaring.
"Who's the thief? You are!"
Jack wrenched free and swung at Ralph with his spear. By common consent, they were using the spears as sabers now, no longer daring the lethal points. The blow struck Ralph's spear and slid down, to fall agonizingly on his fingers. Then they were apart once more, their positions reversed. Jack toward the castle rock, and Ralph on the outside toward the island. Both boys were breathing very heavily.
"Come on, then. Come on."
Truculently, they squared up at each other, but kept just out of fighting distance.
"You come on and see what you get. You come on!"
Piggy, clutching the ground, was trying to attract Ralph's attention. Ralph moved, bent down, kept a wary eye on Jack.
"Ralph, remember what we came for. The fire. My specs."
Ralph nodded. He relaxed his fighting muscles, stood easily, and grounded the butt of his spear. Jack watched him inscrutably through his paint. Ralph glanced up at the pinnacles, then toward the group of savages.
"Listen, we've come to say this. First, you've got to give back Piggy's specs. If he hasn't got them, he can't see. You aren't playing the game."
The tribe of painted savages giggled, and Ralph's mind faltered. He pushed his hair up and gazed at the green and black mask before him, trying to remember what Jack looked like.
Piggy whispered, "And the fire."
"Oh, yes. Then about the fire. I say this again. I've been saying it ever since we dropped in." He held out his spear and pointed at the savages. "Your only hope is keeping a signal fire going as long as there's light to see. Then maybe a ship will notice the smoke and come and rescue us and take us home. But without that smoke, we've got to wait till some ships come by accident. We might wait years, till we're old." The shivering, silvery, unreal laughter of the savages sprayed out and echoed away. A gust of rage shook Ralph. His voice cracked,
Don't you understand? You painted fools. Sam, Eric, Piggy, and me. We aren't enough. We tried to keep the fire going, but we couldn't. And then you, playing at hunting.
He pointed past them to where the trickle of smoke dispersed in the pearly air.
Look at that. Call that a signal fire? That's a cooking fire. Now you'll eat, and there'll be no smoke. Don't you understand? There may be a ship out there.
He paused, defeated by the silence and the painted anonymity of the group guarding the entry. Jack opened a pink mouth and addressed Sam Narek, who were between him and his tribe.
You two, get back.
No one answered him. The twins, puzzled, looked at each other, while Piggy, reassured by the cessation of violence, stood up carefully. Jack glanced back at Ralph and then at the twins.
Grab them.
No one moved. Jack shouted angrily.
I said grab them!
The painted group moved towards Sam Narek nervously and unhandily. Once more, the silvery laughter scattered. Sam Narek protested out of the heart of civilization.
Oh, I say, honestly.
Their spears were taken from them.
Tie them up!
Ralph cried out hopelessly against the black and green mask.
Jack!
Go on, tie them up! Now the painted group felt the otherness of Sam Narek, felt the power in their own hands. They felled the twins clumsily and excitedly. Jack was inspired. He knew that Ralph would attempt a rescue. He struck in a humming circle behind them, and Ralph only just parried the blow. Beyond them, the tribe and the twins were a loud and writhing heap. Piggy crouched again. Then the twins lay astonished, and the tribe stood round them. Jack turned to Ralph and spoke between his teeth.
See? They do what they want.
There was silence again. The twins lay, inexpertly tied up, and the tribe watched Ralph to see what he would do. He numbered them through his fringe, glimpsed the ineffectual smoke. His temper broke. He screamed at Jack.
You're a beast and a swine and a bloody, bloody thief.
He charged. Jack, knowing this was the crisis, charged too. They met with a jolt and bounced apart. On the ear, Ralph hit Jack in the stomach and made him grunt. Then they were facing each other, panting and furious, but unnerved by each other's ferocity. They became aware of the noise that was the background of this fight, the steady, shrill cheering of the tribe behind them. Piggy's voice penetrated to Ralph.
Let me speak.
He was standing in the dust of the fight, and as the tribe saw his intention, the shrill cheer changed to a steady booing. Piggy held up the conch, and the booing sagged a little, then came up again to strength.
I got the conch, he shouted. I tell you, I got the conch.
Surprisingly, there was silence now. The tribe were curious to hear what amusing thing he might have to say. Silence and pause. But in the silence, a curious air noise close by Ralph's head. He gave it half his attention, and there it was again, a faint soup. Someone was throwing stones. Roger was dropping them, his one hand still on the lever. Below him, Ralph was a shock of hair and Piggy a bag of fat.
I got this to say. You're acting like a crowd of kids.
The booing rose and died again as Piggy lifted the white magic shell. Which is better, to be a pack of painted Indians like you are, or to be sensible like Ralph is? A great clamor rose among the savages. Piggy shouted again.
Which is better, to have rules and agree, or to hunt and kill?
Again the clamor rose again and zup. Ralph shouted against the noise.
Which is better, law and rescue, or hunting and breaking things up?
Now Jack was yelling too, and Ralph could no longer make himself heard. Jack had backed right against the tribe, and they were a solid mass of menace that bristled with spears. The intention of a charge was forming among them. They were working up to it, and the neck would be swept clear. Ralph stood facing them, a little to one side, his spear ready. By him stood Piggy, still holding out the talisman, the fragile, shining beauty of the shell. The storm of sound beat at them, an incantation of hatred. High overhead, Roger, with a sense of delirious abandonment, leaned all his weight on the lever. Ralph heard the great rock before he saw it. He was aware of a jolt in the earth that came to him through the soles of his feet, and the breaking sound of stones at the top of the cliff. Then the monstrous red thing bounced across the neck, and he flung himself flat while the tribe shrieked. The rock struck Piggy, a glancing blow from chin to knee. The conch exploded into 1,000 white fragments and ceased to exist. Piggy,
saying nothing, with no time for even a grunt, traveled through the air sideways from the rock, turning over as he went. The rock bounded twice and was lost in the forest. Piggy fell 40 feet and landed on his back across the square red rock in the sea. His arms opened, and stuff came out and turned red. Piggy's arms and legs twitched a bit, like a pig's, after it had been killed. Then the sea breathed again in a long, slow sigh. The water boiled white and pink over the rock, and when it went sucking back again, the body of Piggy was gone. This time, the silence was complete. Ralph's lips formed a word, but no sound came. Suddenly, Jack bounded out from the tribe and began screaming wildly.
See? See? That's what you get! I mean that! There isn't a tribe for you anymore! The conch is gone!
He ran forward, stooping. I'm chief! Viciously, with full intention, he hurled his spear at Ralph. The point tore the skin and flesh over Ralph's ribs, then sheared off and fell in the water. Ralph stumbled, feeling not pain, but panic, and the tribe, screaming now like the chief, began to advance. Another spear, a bent one that would not fly straight, went past his face, and one fell from on high where Roger was. The twins lay hidden behind the tribe and the anonymous devil's faces swarming across the neck. Ralph turned and ran. A great noise as of seagulls rose behind him. He obeyed an instinct that he did not know he possessed and swerved over the open space so that the spears went wide. He saw the headless body of the sow and jumped in time. Then he was crashing through foliage and small boughs and was hidden by the forest. The chief stopped by the pig, turned and held up his hands. Back! Back to the fort! Presently, the tribe returned noisily to the neck where Roger joined them. The chief spoke to him angrily. Why aren't you on watch? Roger looked at him gravely. I just came down. The hangman's horror clung around him. The chief said no more to him but looked down at Sam Narek. You gotta join the tribe. And let me go. And me. The chief snatched one of the few spears that were left and poked Sam in the ribs. What do you mean by it, eh? Said the chief fiercely. What do you mean by coming with spears? What do you mean by not joining my tribe? The prodding became rhythmic. Sam yelled. That's not the way! Roger edged past the chief, only just avoiding pushing him with his shoulder. The yelling ceased, and Sam Narek lay looking up in quiet terror. Roger advanced upon them as one wielding a nameless authority. Chapter 12. Cry of the Hunters. Ralph lay in a covert, wondering about his wounds. The bruised flesh was inches in diameter over his right ribs, with a swollen and bloody scar where the spear had hit him. His hair was full of dirt and tapped like the tendrils of a creeper. All over, he was scratched and bruised from his fight through the forest. By the time his breathing was normal again, he had worked out that bathing these injuries would have to wait. How could you listen for naked feet if you were splashing in water? How could you be safe by the little stream or the open beach? Ralph listened. He was not really far from Castle Rock, and during the first panic, he had thought he heard sounds of pursuit. But the hunters had only sneaked into the fringes of the greenery, retrieving spears perhaps, and then had rushed back to the sunny rock, as if terrified of the darkness under the leaves. He had even glimpsed one of them, stripped down black and red, and had judged that it was Bill. But really, thought Ralph, this was not Bill. This was a savage whose image refused to blend with that ancient picture of a boy in shorts and shirt. The afternoon died away. The circular spots of sunlight moved steadily over green fronds and brown fiber, but no sound came from beyond the rock. At last, Ralph wormed out of the ferns and sneaked forward to the edge of that impenetrable thicket that fronted the neck of land. He peered with elaborate caution between branches at the end, and could see Robert sitting on guard at the top of the cliff. He held the spear in his left hand and was tossing up a pebble and catching it again with his right. Behind him, a column of smoke rose thickly so that Ralph's nostrils flared and his mouth dribbled. He wiped his nose and mouth with the back of his hand and, for the first time since the morning, felt hungry. The tribe must be sitting round the gutted pig, watching the fat ooze and burn among the ashes. They would be intent. Another figure, an unrecognizable one, appeared by Robert and gave him something, then turned and went back behind the rock. Robert laid his spear on the rock beside him and began to gnaw between his raised hands. So the feast was beginning, and the watchman had been given his portion. Ralph saw that for the first time, being he was safe. He limped away through the trees, and drawn by the thought of the poor food, yet bitter when he remembered his feast. Feast today, and then tomorrow. He argued unconvincingly that they would let him alone, perhaps even make an outlaw of him. But then the fatal, unreasoning knowledge came to him again. The breaking of the conch and the deaths of Piggy and Simon lay over the island like a vapor. These painted savages would go further and further. Then there was the indefinable connection between himself and Jack, who therefore would never let him alone. Never. He paused, sun-flecked, holding up a bow, prepared to duck under it. A spasm of terror set him shaking, and he cried aloud, "No, they're not as bad as that. It was an accident." He ducked under the bow, ran clumsily, then stopped and listened. He came to the smashed acres of fruit and ate greedily. He saw two little ones, and not having any idea of his own appearance, wondered why they screamed and ran. When he had eaten, he went toward the beach. The sunlight was slanting now into the palms by the wrecked shelter. There was the platform and the pool. The best thing to do was to ignore this leaden feeling about the heart and rely on their common sense, their daylight sanity. Now the tribe had eaten. The thing to do was to try again. And anyway, he couldn't stay here all night in an empty shelter by the deserted platform. His flesh crept and he shivered in the evening sun. No fire, no smoke, no rescue. He turned and limped away through the forest toward Jack's end of the island. The slanting sticks of sunlight were lost among the branches. At length he came to a clearing in the forest, where rock prevented vegetation from growing. Now it was a pool of shadows, and Ralph nearly flung himself behind a tree when he saw something standing in the center. But then he saw that the white face was bone, and that the pig's skull grinned at him from the top of a stick. He walked slowly into the middle of the clearing and looked steadily at the skull that gleamed as white as ever. The conch had done, and seemed to jeer at him cynically. An inquisitive ant was busy on one of his eye sockets, but otherwise the thing was lifeless. Or was it? Little prickles of sensation ran up and down his back. He stood, the skull about on a level with his face, and held up his hair with two hands. The teeth grinned. The empty sockets seemed to hold his gaze masterfully and without effort. What was it? The skull regarded Ralph like one who knows all the answers and won't tell. A sick fear and rage swept him. Fiercely, he hit out at the filthy thing in front of him that bobbed like a toy and came back, still grinning into his face, so that he lashed and cried out in loathing. Then he was licking his bruised knuckles and looking at the bare stick, while the skull lay in two pieces, its grin now 6 feet across. He wrenched the quivering stick from the crack and held it as a spear between him and the white pieces. Then he backed away, keeping his face to the skull that lay grinning at the sky. When the green glow had gone from the horizon and night was fully accomplished, Ralph came again to the thicket in front of the castle rock. Peeping through, he could see that the height was still occupied, and whoever it was up there had a spear at the ready. He knelt among the shadows and felt his isolation bitterly. They were savages, it was true, but they were human. And the ambushing fears of the deep night were coming on. Ralph moaned faintly. Tired though he was, he could not relax and fall into a well of sleep for fear of the tribe. Might it not be possible to walk boldly into the fort? Say, "I've got Pa." Laugh lightly and sleep like the others? Pretend they were still boys, schoolboys who had said, "Sir, yes, sir," and worn caps. Daylight might have answered yes, but darkness and the horrors of death said no. Lying there in the darkness, he knew he was an outcast. "'Cause I had some sense." He rubbed his cheek along his forearm, smelling the acrid scent of salt and sweat and the staleness of dirt. Over to the left, the waves of ocean were breathing, sucking down, then boiling back over the rock. There were sounds coming from behind the castle rock. Listening carefully, detaching his mind from the swing of the sea, Ralph could make out a familiar rhythm. "Kill the beast, cut his throat, spill his blood." The tribe was dancing. Somewhere on the other side of this rocky wall, there would be a dark circle, a glowing fire, and meat. They would be savoring food in the comfort of safety. A noise near at hand made him quiver. Savages were clambering up the castle rock, right up to the top, and he could hear voices. He sneaked forward a few yards and saw the shape of the top of the rock change and enlarge. There were only two boys on the island who moved or talked like that. Ralph put his head down on his forearms and accepted this new fact like a wound. Samnerek were part of the tribe now. They were guarding the castle rock against him. There was no chance of rescuing them and building up an outlaw tribe at the other end of the island. Samnerek were savages like the rest. Piggy was dead and the conch smashed to powder. At length the guard climbed down. The two that remained seemed nothing like more than a dark extension of the rock. A star appeared behind them and was momentarily eclipsed by some movement. Ralph edged forward, feeling his way over the uneven surface as though he were blind. There were miles of vague water at his right, and the restless ocean lay under his left hand, as awful as the shaft of a pit. Every minute, the water breathed round the death rock and flowered into the field of whiteness. Ralph crawled until he found the ledge of the entry in his grasp. The lookouts were immediately above him, and he could see the end of a spear projecting over the rock. He called very gently, "Samnerek." There was no reply. To Carrie, he must speak louder, and this would rouse those striped and inimical creatures from their feasting by the fire. He set his teeth and started to climb, finding the holds by touch. The stick that had supported a skull hampered him, but he would not be parted from his only weapon. He was nearly level with the twins before he spoke again. "Samnerek." He heard a cry and flurry from the rock. The twins had grabbed each other and were gibbering. "It's me, Ralph." Terrified that they would run and give the alarm, he hauled himself up until his head and shoulders stuck over the top. Far below his armpit, he saw the luminous flowering round the rock. "It's only me, Ralph." At length, they bent forward and peered in his face. "We thought it was... We didn't know what it was. We thought..." Memory of their new and shameful loyalty came to them. Eric was silent, but Sam tried to do his duty. "You gotta go, Ralph. You go away now." He wagged his spear and essayed fierceness. "You shove off, see?" Eric nodded agreement and jabbed his spear in the air. Ralph leaned on his arms and did not go. "I came to see you two." His voice was thick. His throat was hurting him now, though he had received no wound. "I came to see you two." Words could not express the dull pain of these things. He fell silent while the vivid stars were spilt and danced all ways. Sam shifted uneasily. "Honest, Ralph, you better go." Ralph looked up again. "You two aren't painted. How can you? If it were light, shame would burn them at admitting these things. But the night was dark." Eric took up, and then the twins started their antiphonal speech. "You gotta go because it's not safe. They made us. They hurt us." "Who, Jack?" "Oh, no." They bent to him and lowered their voices. "Push off, Ralph. It's a tribe. They made us. We couldn't help it." When Ralph spoke again, his voice was low and seemed breathless. "What have I done? I liked him, and I wanted us to be rescued." Again the stars spilled about the sky. Eric shook his head earnestly. "Listen, Ralph. Never mind what's sense. That's gone. Never mind about the chief. You gotta go for your own good. The chief and Roger. Yes, Roger. They hate you, Ralph. They're gonna do you. They're gonna hunt you tomorrow. But why? I don't know. And Ralph, Jack, the chief, says it'll be dangerous. And we've gotta be careful and throw our spears like at a pig. We're gonna spread out in a line across the island. We're going forward from this end until we find you. We've gotta give signals like this." Eric raised his head and achieved a faint ululation by beating on his open mouth. Then he glanced behind him nervously. "Like that. Only louder, of course." "But I've done nothing," whispered Ralph urgently. "I only wanted to keep a fire." He paused for a moment, thinking miserably of the morrow. A matter of overwhelming importance occurred to him.
What are you?
He could not bring himself to be specific at first, but then fear and loneliness goaded him. When they find me, what are they going to do? The twins were silent. Beneath him, the death rock flowered again.
What are they? Oh God, I'm hungry.
The towering rocks seemed to sway under him.
Well, what?
The twins answered his question indirectly.
You gotta go now, Ralph.
For your own good.
Keep away, as far as you can.
Won't you come with me? Three of us, we'd stand a chance. After a moment's silence, Sam spoke in a strangled voice.
You don't know Roger. He's a terror.
And the chief?
They're both terrors.
Only Roger? Both boys froze. Someone was climbing toward them from the tribe.
He's coming to see if we're keeping watch. Quick, Ralph!
As he prepared to let himself down the cliff, Ralph snatched at the last possible advantage to be wrung out of this meeting.
I'll lie up close, in that thicket down there, he whispered. So keep them away from it. They'll never think to look so close.
The footsteps were still some distance away.
Sam, I'm going to be all right, aren't I?
The twins were silent again.
Here, said Sam suddenly, take this.
Ralph felt a chunk of meat pushed against him and grabbed it.
But what are you going to do when you catch me?
Silence above. He sounded silly to himself. He lowered himself down the rock.
What are you going to do?
From the top of the towering rock came the incomprehensible reply.
Roger sharpened a stick at both ends.
Roger sharpened a stick at both ends. Ralph tried to attach a meaning to this, but could not. He used all the bad words he could think of in a fit of temper that passed into yawning. How long could you go without sleep? He yearned for a bed and sheets, but the only whiteness here was the slow spilt milk, luminous round the rock 40 feet below, where Piggy had fallen. Piggy was everywhere, was on this neck, was become terrible in darkness and death. If Piggy were to come back now, out of the water, with his empty head, Ralph whimpered and yawned like a little one. The stick in his hand became a crutch on which he reeled. Then he tensed again. There were voices raised on the top of Castle Rock. Sam Narek were arguing with someone, but the ferns and the grass were near. That was the place to be in, hidden, and next to the thicket that would serve for tomorrow's hideout. Here, and his hands touched grass, was a place to be in for the night, not far from the tribe, so that if the horrors of the supernatural emerged, one could at least mix with humans for the time being, even if it meant...
What did it mean?
A stick sharpened at both ends.
What was there in that?
They had thrown spears and missed, all but one. Perhaps they would miss next time, too. He squatted down in the tall grass, remembered the meat that Sam had given them, and began to tear at it ravenously. While he was eating, he heard fresh noises. Cries of pain from Sam Narek, cries of panic, angry voices. What did it mean? Someone besides himself was in trouble, for at least one of the twins was catching it. Then the voices passed away down the rock, and he ceased to think of them. He felt with his hands and found cool, delicate fronds backed against the thicket. Here, then, was the night's lair. At first light, he would creep into the thicket, squeeze between the twisted stems, ensconce himself so deep that only a crawler like himself could come through, and that crawler would be jabbed. There he would sit, and the search would pass him by, and the cordon waver on, ululating along the island, and he would be free. He pulled himself between the ferns, tunneling in. He laid the stick beside him and huddled himself down in the blackness. One must remember to wake at first light in order to diddle the savages, and he did not know how quickly sleep came and hurled him down a dark interior slope. He was awake before his eyes were open, listening to a noise that was near. He opened an eye, found the mold an inch or so from his face, and his fingers gripped into it. Light filtered between the fronds of the fern. He had just time to realize that the age-long nightmares of falling and death were past, and that the morning was come. When he heard the sound again, it was an ululation over by the seashore. And now the next savage answered in the next. The cry swept by him across the narrow end of the island, from sea to lagoon, like the cry of a flying bird. He took no time to consider, but grabbed his sharp stick and wriggled back among the ferns. Within seconds, he was worming his way into the thicket, but not before he had glimpsed the legs of a savage coming toward him. The ferns were thumped and beaten, and he heard legs moving in the long grass. The savage, whoever it was, ululated twice, and the cry was repeated in both directions, then died away. Ralph crouched still, tangled in the ferns, and for a time he heard nothing. At last he examined the thicket itself. Certainly no one could attack him here. And moreover, he had a stroke of luck. The great rock that had killed Piggy had bounded into this thicket and bounced there, right in the center, making a smashed space a few feet in extent each way. When Ralph had wriggled into this, he felt secure and clever. He sat down carefully among the smashed stems and waited for the hunt to pass. Looking up between the leaves, he caught a glimpse of something red. That must be the top of the castle rock, distant and unmenacing. He composed himself triumphantly to hear the sounds of the hunt dying away. Yet no one made a sound, and as the minutes passed in the green shade, his feeling of triumph faded. At last he heard a voice, Jack's voice, but hushed. "Are you certain?" The savage addressed said nothing. Perhaps he made a gesture. Roger spoke. "If you're fooling us." Immediately after this, there came a gasp and a squeal of pain. Ralph crouched instinctively. One of the twins was there, outside the thicket, with Jack and Roger. "You're sure he meant in there?" The twin moaned faintly and then squealed again. "He meant he'd hide in there?" "Yes, yes, oh..." Silver laughter scattered among the trees. So they knew. Ralph picked up his stick and prepared for battle. But what could they do? It would take them a week to break a path through the thicket, and anyone who wormed his way in would be helpless. He felt the point of his spear with his thumb and grinned without amusement. Whoever tried that would be stuck, squealing like a pig. They were going away, back to the Tower Rock. He could hear feet moving and then someone sniggering. There came again that high, bird-like cry that swept along the line. So some were still watching for him. But some? There was a long, breathless silence. Ralph found that he had bark in his mouth from the gnawed spear. He stood and peered upwards to the castle rock. As he did so, he heard Jack's voice from the top. "Heave! Heave! Heave!" The red rock that he could see at the top of the cliff vanished like a curtain, and he could see figures in blue sky. A moment later, the earth jolted. There was a rushing sound in the air, and the top of the thicket was cuffed as with a gigantic hand. The rock bounded on, thumping and smashing toward the beach, while a shower of broken twigs and leaves fell on him. Beyond the thicket, the tribe was cheering. Silence again. Ralph put his fingers in his mouth and bit them. There was only one rock up there that they might conceivably move. But that was half as big as a cottage, big as a car, a tank. He visualized its probable progress with agonizing clearness. That one would start slowly, drop from ledge to ledge, trundle across the neck like an outsized steamroller. "Heave! Heave! Heave!" Ralph put down his spear, then picked it up again. He pushed his hair back irritably, took two hasty steps across the little space, and then came back. He stood looking at the broken ends of branches. Still silence. He caught sight of the rise and fall of his diaphragm, and was surprised to see how quickly he was breathing. Just left of center, his heartbeats were visible. He put the spear down again. "Heave! Heave! Heave!" A shrill, prolonged cheer. Something boomed up on the red rock. Then the earth jumped and began to shake steadily, while the noise as steadily increased. Ralph was shot into the air, thrown down, dashed against branches. At his right hand and only a few feet away, the whole thicket bent and the roots screamed as they came out of the earth together. He saw something red that turned over slowly as a mill wheel. Then the red thing was past, and the elephantine progress diminished toward the sea. Ralph knelt on the plowed-up soil and waited for the earth to come back. Presently, the white, broken stumps, the split sticks, and the tangle of the thicket refocused. There was a kind of heavy feeling in his body where he had watched his own pulse. Silence again. yet not entirely so. They were whispering out there. And suddenly the branches were shaken furiously at two places on his right. The pointed end of a stick appeared. In panic, Ralph thrust his own stick through the crack and struck with all his might.
Ah!
His spear twisted a little in his hands, and then he withdrew it again.
Ooh, ooh.
Someone was moaning outside, and a babble of voices rose. A fierce argument was going on, and the wounded savage kept groaning. Then, when there was silence, a single voice spoke, and Ralph decided that it was not Jax.
See? I told you. He's dangerous.
The wounded savage moaned again.
What else? What next?
Ralph fastened his hands around the chewed-up spear, and his hair fell. Someone was muttering only a few yards away toward the castle rock. He heard a savage say,
No!
In a shocked voice, and then there was suppressed laughter. He squatted back on his heels and showed his teeth as the wall of branches. He raised his spear, snarled a little, and waited. Once more, the invisible group sniggered. He heard a curious trickling sound and then a louder crepitation as if someone were unwrapping great sheets of cellophane. A stick snapped, and he stifled a cough. Smoke was seeping through the branches in white and yellow wisps. The patch of blue sky overhead turned to a color of a storm cloud, and then the smoke billowed round him. Someone laughed excitedly, and a voice shouted,
Smoke!
He wormed his way through the thicket toward the forest, keeping as far as possible beneath the smoke. Presently, he saw open space and the green leaves at the edge of the thicket. A smallish savage was standing between him and the rest of the forest. A savage striped red and white and carrying a spear. He was coughing and smearing the paint about his eyes with the back of his hand as he tried to see through the increasing smoke. Ralph launched himself like a cat, stabbed, snarling with the spear, and the savage doubled up. There was a shout from beyond the thicket, and then Ralph was running with the swiftness of fear through the undergrowth. He came to a pig run, followed it for perhaps 100 yards, and then swerved off. Behind him, the ululation swept across the island once more, and a single voice shouted 3 times. He guessed that was the signal to advance, and sped away again, till his chest was like fire. Then he flung himself down under a bush and waited for a moment till his breathing steadied. He passed his tongue tentatively over his teeth and lips and heard far off the ululation of the pursuers. There were many things he could do. He could climb up a tree, but there was putting all his eggs in one basket. If he were detected, they had nothing more difficult to do than wait. If only one had time to think. Another double cry at the same distance gave him a clue of their plan. Any savage balked in the forest would utter the double shout and hold up the line till he was free again. That way they might hope to keep the cordon unbroken, right across the island. Ralph thought of the boar that had broken through them with such ease. If necessary, when the chase came too close, he could charge the cordon while it was still thin, burst through, and run back. But run back where? The cordon would turn and sweep again. Sooner or later, he would have to sleep or eat. And then he would awaken with his hands clawing at him, and the hunt would begin a running down. What was to be done then? The tree? Burst the line like a boar? Either way, the choice was terrible. A single cry quickened his heartbeat, and leaping up, he dashed away toward the oceanside and the thick jungle, till he was hung up among creepers. He stayed there for a moment with his calves quivering. If only one could have quiet, a long pause, a time to think. And there again, shrill and inevitable, was the ululation sweeping across the island. At that sound, he shied like a horse among the creepers, and ran once more till he was panting. He flung himself down by some ferns. The tree or the charge? He mastered his breath for a moment, wiped his mouth, and told himself to be calm. Sam Narek were somewhere in that line, and hating it. Or were they? And supposing, instead of them, he met the chief, or Roger, who carried death in his hands. Ralph pushed back his tangled hair, and wiped the sweat out of his best thigh. He spoke aloud.
Think!
Most he was beginning to dread the curtain that might waver in his brain, blacking out the sense of danger, making a simpleton of him. A third idea would be to hide so well that the advancing line would pass without discovering him. He jerked his head off the ground and listened. There was another noise to attend to now, a deep grumbling noise, as though the forest itself were angry with him. A somber noise across which the ululations were scribbled, excruciatingly as on a slate. He knew he had heard it before somewhere, but had no time to remember. Break the line. A tree. Hide and let them pass. A nearer cry stood him on his feet, and immediately he was away again, running fast among the thorns and brambles. Suddenly, he blundered into an open, found himself again in that open space, and there was the fathom-wide grin of the skull, no longer ridiculing a deep blue patch of sky, but jeering up into a blanket of smoke. Then Ralph was running beneath trees, with the grumble of the forest explained. They had smoked him out and set the island on fire. Hide was better than a tree, because you had a chance of breaking the line if you were discovered. Hide, then. He wondered if a pig would agree, and grimaced at nothing. Find the deepest thicket, the darkest hole on the island, and creep in. Now, as he ran, he peered about him. Bars and splashes of sunlight flitted over him, and sweat made glistening streaks on his dirty body. The cries were far now, and faint. At last he found what seemed to him the right place, though the decision was desperate. Here, bushes and a wild tangle of creeper made a mat that kept out all the light of the sun. Beneath it was a space, perhaps a foot high, though it was pierced everywhere by parallel and rising stems. If you wormed into the middle of that, you would be 5 yards from the edge, and hidden, unless the savage chose to lie down and look for you. And even then, you would be in darkness. And if the worst happened and he saw you, then you had a chance to burst out at him, fling the whole line out of step and double back. Cautiously, his stick trailing behind him, Ralph wormed between the rising stems. When he reached the middle of the mat, he lay and listened. The fire was a big one, and the drum roll that he had thought was left so far behind was nearer. Couldn't a fire outrun a galloping horse? He could see the sun-splashed ground over an area of perhaps 50 yards from where he lay, and as he watched, the sunlight in every patch blinked at him. This was so like the curtain that flapped in his brain that for a moment he thought the blinking was inside him. But then the patches blinked more rapidly, dulled and went out, so that he saw that a great heaviness of smoke lay between the island and the sun. If anyone peered under the bushes and chanced to glimpse human flesh, it might be Sam Narick, who would pretend not to see and say nothing. He laid his cheek against the chocolate-colored earth, licked his dry lips, and closed his eyes. Under the thicket, the earth was vibrating, very slightly, or perhaps there was a sound beneath the obvious thunder or the fire, and scribbled ululations that were too low to hear. Someone cried out. Ralph jerked his cheek off the earth and looked into the dulled light. They must be near now, he thought, and his chest began to thump. Hide. Break the line. Climb a tree. Which was the best after all? The trouble was, you only had one chance. Now the fire was nearer. Those volleying shots were great limbs, trunks even, bursting. The fools, the fools! The fire must be almost at the fruit trees. What would they eat tomorrow? Ralph stirred restlessly in his narrow bed. One chance, nothing. What could they do? Beat him? So what? Kill him? A stick sharpened at both ends. The cries, suddenly nearer, jerked him up. He could see a striped savage moving hastily out of the green tangle, and coming toward the mat where he hid, a savage who carried a spear. Ralph gripped his fingers into the earth. Be ready now, in case. Ralph fumbled to hold his spear, so that it was point foremost, and now he saw that the stick was sharpened at both ends. The savage stopped 15 yards away and uttered his cry. Perhaps he can hear my heart over the noises of the fire. Don't scream. Get ready. The savage moved forward so you could only see him from the waist down. That was the butt of his spear. Now you could see him from the knee down. Don't scream. A herd of pigs came squealing out of the greenery behind the savage and rushed away into the forest. Birds were screaming, mice shrieking, and a little hopping thing came under the mat and cowered. 5 yards away, the savage stopped, standing right by the thicket, and cried out. Ralph drew his feet up and crouched. The stake was in his hands. The stake sharpened at both ends. The stake that vibrated so wildly that grew long, short,
light, heavy, light again. The ululation spread from shore to shore. The savage knelt down by the edge of the thicket, and there were lights flickering in the forest behind him. You could see a knee disturb the mold. Now the other. Two hands, a spear, a face. The savage peered into the obscurity beneath the thicket. You could tell that he saw light on this side and on that, but not in the middle. There. In the middle was a blob of dark, and the savage wrinkled up his face, trying to decipher the darkness. The seconds lengthened. Ralph was looking straight into the savage's eyes. Don't scream. You'll get back. Now he's seen you. He's making sure. A stick sharpened. Ralph screamed. A scream of fright and anger and desperation. His legs straightened. The screams became continuous and foaming. He shot forward, burst the thicket, was in the open, screaming, snarling, bloody. He swung the stake and the savage tumbled over. But there were others coming toward him, crying out. He swerved as a spear flew past and then was silent, running. All at once, the lights flickering ahead of him merged together. The roar of the forest rose to thunder, and a tall bush directly in his path burst into a great fan-shaped flame. He swung to the right, running desperately fast with the heat beating on his left side and the fire racing forward like a tide. The ululation rose behind him and spread along, a series of short, sharp cries, the sighting call. A brown figure showed up at his right and fell away. They were all running, all crying out madly. He could hear them crashing in the undergrowth, and on the left was the hot, bright thunder of the fire. He forgot his wounds, his hunger and thirst, and became fear. Hopeless fear on flying feet, rushing through the forest toward the open beach. Spots jumping before his eyes and turning into red circles that expanded quickly till they passed out of sight. Below him, someone's legs were getting tired, and the desperate ululation advanced like a jagged fringe of menace and was almost overhead. He stumbled over a root, and the cry that pursued him rose even higher. He saw a shelter burst into flames, and the fire flapped at his right shoulder, and there was the glitter of water. Then he was down, rolling over and over in the wet sand, crouching with arm to ward off, trying to cry for mercy. He staggered to his feet, tensed for more terrors, and looked up at a huge peaked cap. It was a white-topped cap, and above the green shade of the peak was a crown and anchor, gold foliage. He saw a white drill, epaulettes, a revolver, a row of gilt buttons down the front of a uniform. A naval officer stood on the sand, looking down at Ralph in wary astonishment. On the beach behind him was a cutter, her bows hauled up and held by two ratings. In the stern sheets, another rating held a submachine gun. The ululation faltered and died away. The officer looked at Ralph doubtfully for a moment, then took his hand away from the butt of the revolver. Hello. Squirming a little, conscious of his filthy appearance, Ralph answered shyly, Hello. The officer nodded, as if a question had been answered. Are there any adults, any grown-ups with you? Dumbly, Ralph shook his head. He turned a half pace on the sand. A semicircle of little boys, their bodies streaked with colored clay, sharp sticks in their hands, were standing on the beach making no noise at all. Fun and games, said the officer. The fire reached the coconut palms by the beach and swallowed them noisily. A flame, seemingly detached, swung like an acrobat and licked up the palm heads on the platform. The sky was black. The officer grinned cheerfully at Ralph. We saw your smoke. What have you been doing? Having a war or something? Ralph nodded. The officer inspected the little scarecrow in front of him. The kid needed a bath, a haircut, a nose wipe, and a good deal of ointment. Nobody killed, I hope. Any dead bodies? Only two, and they've gone. The officer leaned down and looked closely at Ralph. Two? Killed? Ralph nodded again. Behind him, the whole island was shuddering with flame. The officer knew, as a rule, when people were telling the truth. He whistled softly. Other boys were appearing now, tiny tots, some of them,
brown with the distended bellies of small savages. One of them came close to the officer and looked up. I'm... But there was no more to come. Percival Wemyss Madison sought in his head for an incantation that had faded clean away. The officer turned back to Ralph. We'll take you off. How many of you are there? Ralph shook his head. The officer looked past him to the group of painted boys. Who's boss here?
I am, said Ralph loudly.
A little boy who wore the remains of an extraordinary black cap on his red hair and who carried the remains of a pair of spectacles at his waist started forward, then changed his mind and stood still.
We saw your smoke, and you don't know how many of you there are.
No, sir. I should have thought, said the officer as he visualized the search before him. I should have thought that a pack of British boys, you're all British, aren't you? Would have been able to put up a better show than that. I mean, it was like that at first, said Ralph. Before things... He stopped. We were together then. The officer nodded helpfully. I know, jolly good show, like the Coral Island. Ralph looked at him dumbly. For a moment, he had a fleeting picture of the strange grandeur that had once invested the beaches. But the island was scorched up like dead wood. Simon was dead, and Jack had... The tears began to flow, and sobs shook him. He gave himself up to them now for the first time on the island. Great, shuddering spasms of grief that seemed to wrench his entire body. His voice rose under the black smoke before the burning wreckage of the island, and infected by that emotion, the other little boys began to shake and sob too. And in the middle of them, with filthy body, matted hair, and unwiped nose, Ralph wept for the end of innocence, the darkness of man's heart, and the fall through the air of the true, wise friend called Piggy. The officer, surrounded by these noises, was moved and a little embarrassed. He turned away to give them time to pull themselves together, and waited, allowing his eyes to rest on the trim cruiser in the distance. The end. Notes on Lord of the Flies. The above notes pretend to be no more than a series of reflections on aspects of Lord of the Flies. An exhaustive study of its symbolism has not yet been attempted. In answer to a publicity questionnaire from the American publishers of Lord of the Flies, William Golding, born Cornwall, 1911, declared that he was brought up to be a scientist and revolted. After 2 years of Oxford, he changed his educational emphasis from science to English literature and became devoted to Anglo-Saxon. After publishing a volume of poetry, he, quote, wasted the next 4 years, end quote. And when World War II broke out, he joined the Royal Navy. For the next 5 years, he was involved in naval matters, except for a few months in New York and 6 months with Lord Sherwell in a research establishment. He finished his naval career as a lieutenant in command of a rocket ship. He had seen action against battleships, submarines, and aircraft, and had participated in the Welcheren and D-Day operations. After the war, he began teaching and writing. Today, his novels include Lord of the Flies, The Inheritors, which may be loosely described as a novel of prehistory, but is, like all of Golding's work, much more, and Pincher Martin, published in hardcover by Harcourt Brace as The Two Deaths of Christopher Martin. He lists his hobbies as thinking, classical Greek, sailing and archaeology, and his literary influences as Euripides and the anonymous Anglo-Saxon author of The Battle of Maldon. The theme of Lord of the Flies is described by Golding as follows, in the same publicity questionnaire. The theme is an attempt to trace the defects of society back to the defects of human nature. The moral is that the shape of a society must depend on the ethical nature of the individual and not on any political system, however apparently logical or respectable. The whole book is symbolic in nature, except the rescue in the end where adult life appears, dignified and capable, but in reality enmeshed in the same evil as the symbolic evil of the children on the island. The officer, having interrupted a manhunt, prepares to take the children off the island in a cruiser, which will presently be hunting its enemy in the same implacable way. And who will rescue the adult and his cruiser?
This is, of course, merely a casual summing up on Mr. Golding's part of his extremely complex and beautifully woven symbolic web, which becomes apparent as he follows through the book. But it does indicate that Lord of the Flies is not, to say the least, a simple adventure story of boys on a desert island. In fact, the implications of the story go far beyond the degeneration of a few children. What is unique about the work of Golding is the way he has combined and synthesized all the characteristically 20th century methods of analysis of the human being and human society, and used this unified knowledge to comment on a test situation. In this book, as in few others at the present time, our findings of psychoanalysts of all schools, anthropologists, social psychologists, and philosophical historians, mobilized into an attack upon the central problem of modern thought, the nature of the human personality, and the reflection of personality on society. Another feature of Golding's work is the superb use of symbolism, a symbolism that works. The central symbol itself, the Lord of the Flies, is like any true symbol, much more than the sum of its parts. But some elements of it might be isolated. The Lord of the Flies is a translation of the Hebrew Baalazuv, Beelzebub in Greek. It has been suggested that it was a mistranslation of a mistransliterated word, which gave us this pungent and suggestive name for the devil. A devil whose name suggests that he is devoted to decay, destruction, demoralization, hysteria, and panic, and who therefore fits in very well with Golding's theme. The devil is not present in any traditional religious sense. Golding's Beelzebub is the modern equivalent, the anarchic, amoral, driving force that Freudians call the id, whose only function seems to be to ensure the survival of the host in which it is embedded or embodied, which function it performs with tremendous and single-minded tenacity. Although it is possible to find other names for this force, the modern picture of the personality, whether drawn by theologians or psychoanalysts, inevitably includes this force or psychic nature as the fundamental principle of modern man. The tenets of civilization, the moral and social codes, the ego, the intelligence itself, form only a veneer over this white-hot power, this uncontrollable force, the fury and the mire of human veins. Dostoevsky found salvation in this freedom, although he found damnation in it also. Yeats found in it the only source of creative genius. Whatever flames upon the night, man's own resinous heart was fed. Conrad was appalled by this heart of darkness. And existentialists find in all the denial of this freedom the source of perversion of all human values. Indeed, one could, if one were so minded, go through the entire canon of modern literature, philosophy, and psychology, and find this great basic drive defined as underlying the most fundamental conclusions of modern thought. The emergence of this concealed, basic wildness is the theme of the book. The struggle between Ralph, the representative of civilization, with his parliaments and his brain trust. Piggy, the intellectual whose shattered spectacles mark the progressive decay of rational influence as the story progresses. And Jack, in whom the spark of wildness burns hotter and closer to the surface than in Ralph, and who is the leader of the forces of anarchy on the island, is also, of course, the struggle in modern society between those same forces, translated into a worldwide scale. The turning point in the struggle between Ralph and Jack is the killing of the sow. That's found on pages 133 through 144. The sow is a mother. Sunk in deep maternal bliss lay the largest of the lot. The great bladder of her belly was fringed with a row of piglets that slept or burrowed and squeaked. The killing of the sow is accomplished in terms of sexual intercourse. They were just behind her when she staggered into an open space, where bright flowers grew and butterflies danced around each other, and the air was hot and still. Here, struck down by the heat, the sow fell, and hunters hurled themselves at her. This dreadful eruption from an unknown world made her frantic. She squealed and bucked, and the air was full of sweat and noise and blood and terror. Roger ran round the heap, prodding with his spear whenever pig flesh appeared. Jack was on top of the sow, stabbing downward with his knife. Roger, a natural sadist who becomes the official torturer and executioner for the tribe, found a lodgment for his point and began to push till he was leaning with his whole weight. The spear moved forward inch by inch, and the terrified squealing became a high-pitched scream.
Then Jack found the throat, and the hot blood spouted over his hands. The sow collapsed under them, and they were heavy and fulfilled upon her. The butterflies still danced, preoccupied in the center of the clearing. The pig's head is cut off, a stick is sharpened at both ends, and jammed in a crack in the earth. The death planned for Ralph at the end of the book involves a stick sharpening at both ends. The pig's head is impaled on the stick. The head hung there, a little blood dribbling down the stick. Instinctively, the boys drew back too, and the forest was very still. They listened, and the loudest noise was the buzzing of flies over the spilled guts. Jack offers this grotesque trophy to the beast, the terrible animal that the littler children had been dreaming of, and which seems to be lurking on the island wherever they were not looking. The entire incident forms a horrid parody of the Oedipal wedding night. These emotions, the sensations aroused by murder and death, and the overpowering and unaccustomed emotions of sexual love experienced by the half-grown boys, plus their own irrational fears and blind terrors, release the forces of death and the devil on the island. After this occurs, the most deeply symbolic incident in the book, the interview of Simon, an embryo mystic with the head. The head seems to be saying, to Simon's heightened perceptions, that everything was a bad business. The half-shut eyes were dim with the infinite cynicism of adult life. Simon fights with all his feeble power against the message of the head, against the ancient, inescapable recognition, the recognition of human capacities for evil and the superficial nature of human moral systems. It is the knowledge of the end of innocence for which Ralph is to weep at the close of the book. "Fancy thinking the beast was something you could hunt and kill," said the head. For a moment or two, the forest and all other deeply appreciated places echoes with the parody of laughter. "You knew, didn't you? I'm part of you. Close, close, close. I'm the reason why it's no go. Why things are what they are." At the end of this fantastic scene, Simon imagines he is looking into a vast mouth. There was blackness within, a blackness that spread. Simon was inside the mouth. He fell down and lost consciousness. This mouth, Conrad's heart of darkness, I saw the lying Kurtz open his mouth wide. It gave him a weirdly voracious aspect, as though he wanted to swallow all the air, all the earth, all the men before him. Indeed, Golding seems very close to Conrad, both in basic principles and in artistic method. The symbol of ravenous, unreasoning, and eternally insatiable nature appears again in Pincher Martin, in which the development of the theme of a nature inimical to the conscious personality of man is developed in a stunning fashion. In Lord of the Flies, however, only the outline of a philosophy is sketched, and the boys of the island are figures in a parable or fable which, like all great fables or parables, reveals to the reader an intimate, disquieting connection between the innocent, time-passing, storytelling aspect of its surface and the great, dimly appreciated depths of its interior. E. L. Epstein.